Hello, and thank you for listening to today's episode of JAT Cast, the official podcast of the Journal of Athletic Training. I'm your host, Luke Donovan. On today's podcast, I'll be summarizing a recent article published online in the Journal of Athletic Training with the goal of providing you with the best information from this article that you can apply to your clinical practice. After the summary, we will be joined by Dr. Janet Simon to discuss her and her collaborators' latest works regarding athletic training services provided for patients with ankle sprain and knee injuries sustained during high school athletics. All papers we will be discussing today can be found on the JAT website, natajournals.org, and please remember that all content from JAT is open access to all readers thanks to the funding from the National Athletic Trainers Association. Let's survey the scene. The article that I will summarize and the two articles Dr. Simon will discuss all pertain to athletic training point of care. Research on sports-related concussions, knee injuries, and ankle sprains has rapidly increased over the past years. Paralleling the growth in research, the number of athletic trainers and the number of student athletes has also increased. Due to these positive changes, it is important to determine the most common services provided by athletic trainers in the presence of the previously mentioned injuries. To one, determine whether the provided patient care aligns with the current clinical recommendations, and two, gain a better understanding of how resources are being allocated. As the profession continues to advocate for student athletes, regardless of the setting, to have full access to a full-time athletic trainer, our profession must ensure that we continue to provide the most appropriate care and fill the gaps in areas that are currently limited. Now that I provided a brief overview, let's discuss some specifics about the first article titled, The Self-Efficacy of Certified Athletic Trainers in Assessing and Managing Sport-Related Concussions. This article is by Jennifer Savage and Dr. Tracy Kovassin from Michigan State University. In this paper, the author's primary purpose was to examine the overall self-efficacy of athletic trainers and their assessment and management of sport-related concussions, with a secondary aim to determine whether differences in self-efficacy exist between high school and collegiate athletic trainers. Research pertaining to sport-related concussions has drastically increased over the last 10 years, which has resulted in numerous updates on how athletic trainers should assess and manage concussions. The 2014 NATA position statement on the assessment and management of concussions recommends that a multifaceted approach should be utilized to assess various domains that could be altered. These domains include symptoms, physical signs, balance and cognition, sleep and wake cycles, behavior, and the vestibular ocular motor system. Previous research has found that not all athletic trainers implement the current recommended practices for the management of concussions. The authors of the paper I'm summarizing attribute the non-uniform implementation of the recommended concussion management practices across athletic trainers to reduced self-efficacy related to newer assessment and management tools. Using the Bandura self-efficacy theoretical framework, the authors define self-efficacy as an individual's beliefs in one's capabilities to organize and execute the courses of action required to manage prospective situations. Using this definition, self-efficacy provides an estimate of how well an individual perceives his or her ability to successfully perform a specific task. Or in the instance of this article, how do athletic trainers from high school and collegiate settings perceive their ability to successfully assess and manage sport-related concussions? As sport-related concussion research continues to advance, athletic trainers' self-efficacy of assessing and managing concussions could influence the decision-making and care they provide to a concussed athlete. Therefore, it is important to evaluate the current level of self-efficacy and to implement strategies to improve self-efficacy if low. Now let's discuss the methods used within this study. The author sent an electronic survey to 1,000 athletic trainers working within the high school or collegiate setting through the NATA member database. The survey consisted of three primary sections. Section one measured the athletic trainer's demographic information, such as age, years of certification, highest level degree, current job setting, and the number of concussions that were managed over the past year. The second section consisted of questions measuring the athletic trainer's self-efficacy when using 11 tools that are recommended to use when assessing a patient with a suspected concussion. Finally, the third section addressed the athletic trainer's self-efficacy in using concussion tools involved in managing, treating, and safely returning an athlete to sport after sustaining a concussion. Some of the tools that were referred to within the second and third section of the survey were the concussion symptom checklist, the King-Devick test, vestibular ocular motor screening, the sport concussion assessment tool, version 3, computerized testing, and balance testing. All the previously mentioned instruments have been validated and recommended to be included as part of the assessment and management of concussions. To complete the self-efficacy assessment and management questions of the survey, participants were asked to select from a 0 to 100 scale, where 0 equals no self-efficacy, 50 equals moderate self-efficacy, and 100 equals complete self-efficacy. The survey had a total of 29 questions. The results of the study are as follows. A total of 94 surveys that met the criteria of the study were included in the analysis. The number of responses between collegiate and high school settings were fairly evenly distributed. When examining self-efficacy across both settings, the overall self-efficacy of the assessment of concussions was approximately 60, while the self-efficacy of management was about 55. Both of these values equate to the athletic trainers having moderate self-efficacy as it relates to assessing and managing concussions. Specific to assessment, athletic trainers had scored greater than 90 when asked about the symptom checklist and the history and clinical evaluation assessment tools. On the other hand, the lowest self-efficacy scores were for the vestibular ocular motor screening scoring, the King-Devick test, and paper and pencil neuropsychological test. The self-efficacy scores for these tools range from 39 to as low as 5. Pertaining to management, athletic trainers scored greater than 90 from the symptom checklist, return to play progression, and for provided home care instructions. While once again, vestibular ocular therapy, King-Devick test, and paper and pencil neuropsychology test demonstrated the lowest self-efficacy score ranging from 17 to 6. Another interesting finding is that a relationship existed between assessment and management self-efficacy scores. Meaning, if an athletic trainer had high self-efficacy for assessment of concussions, that same athletic trainer most likely reported high self-efficacy for the management of concussions. When analyzing the secondary purpose of this study, the authors found that on average, collegiate athletic trainers reported higher self-efficacy for both the assessment and management of concussions. There was approximately an 8-point difference between collegiate and high school athletic trainers for both assessment and management. For assessment of concussions, collegiate athletic trainers reported higher self-efficacy for balance measures and the King-Devick test when compared to the high school athletic trainers. On the management side, collegiate athletic trainers reported greater self-efficacy for the balance measure and vestibular ocular therapy, once again, when compared to the high school athletic trainers. Based on these results, the authors speculate that possible reasons for athletic trainers reporting lower self-efficacy for the vestibular ocular motor screening, vestibular ocular therapy, balance, King-Devick test, and paper and pencil tests may be due to the time in which these tests were developed, as some of these tests are newer while others being older. These tests also require additional training and require additional resources. Even though respondents displayed high self-efficacy in some categories, other categories, which are still recommended to be incorporated as part of the assessment and management of concussions, corresponded with low self-efficacy. This low self-efficacy is concerning as we want to ensure athletic trainers are confident in their ability to administer appropriate care to patients with a concussion. Provided the results and the possible explanation of the results, the authors conclude, and I quote, "Practicing athletic trainers, educators, and researchers need to continue to review the current sport-related concussion guidelines and recommendations while using the most up-to-date and accurate tools for their patients. The study indicates the need for athletic trainers to understand their own self-efficacy and to use effective techniques to enhance their clinical abilities in all situations. Future investigators should focus on increasing the self-efficacy of athletic trainers and other sports medicine professionals through intervention strategies such as modeling, positive talk, and goal setting. It is vital for athletic trainers to have high self-efficacy in their assessment and management of patients with sport-related concussion, along with proper knowledge of sport-related concussions to ensure the safety of all concussed athletes." Now I have the pleasure of talking with Dr. Janet Simon from Ohio University, who recently authored a paper titled Athletic Training Service Characteristics for Patients with Ankle Sprains Sustained During High School Athletics, and was also a co-author on a paper titled High School Athletic Trainer Services for Knee Injuries. We are going to discuss both papers today, and you can find both at natajournals.org. Hi, Dr. Simon, and welcome to JATcast.
Hi, Luke. Thank you for having me on today. I'm happy to be here.
Dr. Simon, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. I'm Janet Simon. I'm an assistant professor at Ohio University. Before that, I worked at University of Toledo for 1 year as a visiting professor. I did my education work, my undergrad at Southern Connecticut State University in athletic training. I did my master's here at Ohio University and had a graduate assistantship with the university football team. And then I did my PhD work at Indiana University.
Can you provide a brief background and summary of your latest work on AT services for knee and ankle injuries?
So the couple papers that just came out regarding AT services on ankle sprains and knee injuries was work that I collaborated with the Daedalus Center for Sports Injury Research based in Indianapolis. So I've worked with them periodically through the last several years, and we were really interested in putting out work regarding what athletic trainers are actually doing in the clinical setting. So there's a lot of epidemiology work on, you know, number of counts of injuries, how often do they occur in a variety of different sports, but there really is not a lot of work on what type of treatments or other services individuals are being provided following an injury. And the Daedalus Center has the ability to do that with their high school project. So it was a great collaboration between us and them, because we could provide the expertise from the clinical background that we have regarding ankle sprains or knee injuries.
What made you develop and execute these projects specifically regarding the ankle and knee injury?
So there's a lack of published work in this area. And then I have a particular interest in ankle sprains, and my colleague Dustin Grooms, who was the lead author on the knee paper, has a particular interest in knee injuries. So we thought that we could each kind of lead both of those and kind of provide our clinical expertise and our research expertise to those papers. And again, the Daedalus Center kind of provides the infrastructure to actually collect these data. So we physically didn't collect these data. They do through their Nation project. So it was kind of a collaboration between the two of us. Most treatment studies kind of get documented from like the National Insurance Agency. So a study was put out actually that you were a co-investigator on by Feger in 2017. And they used insurance records, ICD-9 codes, to look at treatments that are provided. But, you know, that's not necessarily athletic trainers providing services. So these studies really provide data that athletic trainers are doing.
Can you provide a little bit more description about the data collection process? Specifically, can you describe from the athletic trainer side of things? So you have the system set in place. What steps would they go through to be involved in uploading their management of these injuries?
Yeah, so there's a variety of different ways that individuals can participate. These data here are specifically for the high school project. They do have a NCAA project. So if you're a collegiate athletic trainer looking to get involved in research, clinical research, you can reach out to the Daedalus Center for their collegiate study. The thing with the collegiate study is they don't actually document treatments. So that's not something that can be done on that level, but they do document injuries. So if an athletic trainer is interested in participating, they can contact the Daedalus Center. They will go through a training, so about an hour training, using their system. So there's a couple different options to submit data. You can use a already existing injury tracking software, such as SIMS or ATS. They have a couple other partnerships, or you can actually use their free injury surveillance tool. So it doesn't cost anything to participate. So a lot of the high schools that participate that can't afford, you know, a software program will use the free injury surveillance tool, which is a lot of what our high schools use here in the Athens area. So they do a training for an hour, kind of learn about all the different fields that are required, most most of them are just drop-down menus, very easy for the athletic trainer to document. And then they're basically kind of just set up to go for the year. They occasionally will be contacted by the Daedalus Center saying, you know, we see that, you know, you're missing or a return to play date for this specific injury. Can you put that in? But the Daedalus Center doesn't receive any identifiable information. That's all stripped from the data that's sent to them. So data is uploaded to them weekly, and it's just through the internet, is sent to them, transmission. And then they basically can publish papers regarding those data.
With that system, are there any key limitations that the listeners should know about?
So there's obviously limitations with epidemiology studies because there's a lot of control that is out of, for example, in this case, the Daedalus Center's hands. So when we think about, you know, traditional research studies, we have a lot of control, right? We tell the participants, you know, when they can exercise or not to exercise or whatever it is. This is real clinical data. We don't police the athletic trainer's documentation. We, you know, aren't contacting them every day saying, did you document today? It's really what the athletic trainers document. So there's possible that injuries don't get documented. There are over-documenters, there are under-documenters, but that's real life. And so that's probably the biggest limitation for these kind of studies.
Across both of the papers, what do you find as being the most important results?
So the most important results for the ankle sprain paper, I think, was really looking at the non-time loss injuries. What's unique about the Daedalus Center is they have athletic trainers document non-time loss injuries. And this is kind of a new area for injury epidemiology. Previous people that were documenting injuries really looked at time loss only injuries. But a lot of athletic trainers see a lot of non-time loss injuries. So we want to make sure that we're highlighting everything an athletic trainer is doing. So a majority of the ankle sprain injuries were non-time loss, about 65%. And the services provided for those injuries were a majority non-time loss. And so I think that's really key to show is even though an ankle sprain was considered a non-time loss injury, it does require a lot of services.
Has there been any work similar to this in the collegiate population?
To my knowledge, there's not been as extensive work regarding athletic training services in the knee paper. Like I said previously, the Daedalus Center is one of the few larger epidemiology studies that actually documents athletic training services, and they only do that at the high school level. They don't do it at the collegiate level study. And the other ones out there, like High School Rio, they don't document athletic training services, to my knowledge. In this kind of method, no, there's not really much out there in the collegiate setting. Again, we can use things like the National Insurance Database, but it's unclear, you know, are those collegiate injuries or are the athletic training services being provided? So not to this level.
What were the most surprising findings regarding the services provided for knee and ankle injuries in the high school setting?
So I think the most surprising things are really ankle sprains. A lot of people perceive them as kind of like minor injuries. And, you know, there's been research showing about 50% of ankle sprains don't seek medical treatment or a diagnosis from a medical professional. However, you know, and that coincides with our data showing 80%, you know, did not have a time loss injury. But almost all of those injuries at least had one athletic training service. So whether that was an eval or some other rehab, they all required at least one AT service. Only 30 ankle sprains out of all the ankle sprains we had didn't receive any service from the athletic trainer. So these are requiring a lot of resources, and there's emerging literature out there showing that even these minor musculoskeletal injuries have long-term effects. So that's been documented really well, like in the ACL literature, but it's not really been documented that well in the ankle sprain literature. And I think showing these kind of data shows that they do require services, and now we need to do some long-term follow-up with these individuals saying, you know, how do you feel years down the road? And you know, do they need to continue to seek treatment?
Stemming from the results of this, of your studies, what advice would you provide for clinicians currently employed in the high school setting?
I think the biggest thing is we need to show the worth of the athletic trainer at the high school setting. So documenting is really important. Whether you're using your own system or are interested in using the data system, you need to document to really show your worth. So documenting all evals, all treatments you are providing, and then you can do stuff with that data. And the Data Center actually will help you. So if you're interested in putting a presentation together for your athletic director, showing them the number of services provided or evals given for the year, you can get all your data back from them and then, you know, provide that information to the community to really show the worth that you have.
Based on the findings of this article and your other work, what is your next big question?
So I think the next big thing out there is showing that the services that athletic trainers are providing are actually getting good outcomes for the individual. So we know that people are getting injured. We know that athletic trainers are providing services, but are the services they are providing actually getting the individual the outcome that they want? So we need to track these individuals long-term and see how they're doing, you know, even 6 months down the road, a year down the road, or even longer.
What is the best paper that you've read lately? And this doesn't need to be a paper within the Journal of Athletic Training, but something related to the profession would be preferred.
So this is actually from the Journal of Athletic Training. This was an article put out just recently by the individuals up in Wisconsin, Eric Post. They put out a paper on socioeconomic status in athletic trainers. So I just read that paper today. And that was a really interesting study showing that individuals without an athletic trainer on site had, you know, students more available for free lunch or things like that. So it's really interesting looking at other factors and injury such as socioeconomic status. And I thought that paper was really interesting.
Dr. Simon, thank you for taking the time to answer my questions about your most recent works published in Journal of Athletic Training.
Thank you.
Well, that is it for today's JAT Cast. Please remember to rate and subscribe to the podcast, which is available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can find out more information about upcoming podcasts and other JAT events on our Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram accounts at JAT_NATA. Thank you for listening, and keep a lookout for next month's JAT Cast.